Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
In this lucky 13th episode, we're rubbing rabbit's feet, finding four-leaf clovers, and generally living a charmed life.
In witchcraft, we're making a money bowl.
And in spelled out, we're looking at Van Van Oil. Stick around. Okay, so here we are, lucky 13.
Yay!
Brought to you by the number 13 and Friday the 13th, which is hopefully when we're going to be posting this episode.
Hopefully.
I'm kind of excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of fun. You don't really get a chance to do that very often. But
what, post podcasts on Friday the 13th?
Well, post the 13th podcast on Friday the 13th. How serendipitous. How lucky. Lucky indeed. So that's the subject of the show tonight, folks. We're looking at luck, particularly lucky charms, I guess, talismans. Mm-hmm. Folk magic related to luck, things like that. So what are we starting with here?
I guess we should start with defining luck.
Okay.
How we define it.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's a hard thing to define for me.
Is luck something that enters into everyone's life, or are some people born lucky, or are they born unlucky? How does that work?
I would say, I like the way you put it, it enters into your life. Okay. Not that I think you're sort of born clean, like just clean slate, you know.
Sort of neutral.
Yeah, tabula rasa, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. So then, do you do certain things and that attracts the luck, or is it just sort of luck happens to sort of tap you at some point in life? Or is it
both? Well, both. I think it's both, right. Yeah. But we were talking earlier about how to define it, and Corey had a very good way of putting it, so why don't you...
Which I totally stealing from J.K. Rowling / whoever directed the latest...
That's
Harry
okay.
Potter film. The Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince film. If you haven't seen it, brief spoiler alert. going to be talking about a specific scene that doesn't dramatically affect the outcome or anything like that. It's just a nice little moment in the movie. But if you don't want to hear about it, fast forward for about 2 minutes. You should be able to pick up the conversation from there. So in one particular scene, Harry is... He's trying to get some information, I think, is basically what it's coming down to.
Mm-hmm.
And someone has given him this formula called Felix Navidad.
Felix I can
Felix
never Navidad. Say it. I did earlier and I can't now.
Like Felicitades?
Felicitas.
Felicitas. Felix Felicitas.
There we go.
Which is sort of like a luck and happiness potion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he takes this potion and instantly this sort of physical change comes over him where he suddenly looks like he's very happy and everything is kind of clicking for him.
He honestly looks a little drunk in the movie.
He does. And that's a very good point. He looks slightly drunk or slightly high.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden things just start to work for him. But it's not like he starts, you know, tripping over bags of gold coins or anything like that. It's just that he has this sudden impulse like, I think I need to go to Hagrid's hut. And he does. And good things come of that. And I sort of look at luck in those terms. I look at it as having an instinct, getting a sign, maybe an omen or whatever, and thinking, and not ignoring it, and following it through and having it be the right thing to do. It's sort of a sharpening of intuition.
Yeah, I think it helps put you in the right place at the right time,
kind of,
but you have to do the work at the same time.
Yes.
Which is a good way of looking at it, I think.
Right. It's sort of that receptive state of mind
where
you're able to sense what you need to do, which, you know, that's being able to do that is a pretty lucky phenomenon anyway, I think. But that's definitely good luck in my opinion is that. And bad luck seems to be when you don't see something bad coming and it sort of hits you and it blindsides you. Because, you know, bad things can happen every day. But if you know they're coming and you plan for them, you can mitigate the damage.
Yeah.
But a lot of times something will really blindside you. You're like, oh, I've got a flat tire. Whereas maybe somewhere along the line, you might have had some signal to your brain that you didn't notice. So I don't know for sure if that's how bad luck works. But I know on the good luck side of things, I think of it in those terms.
Okay.
What about you?
Well, like I said, I was having a really hard time defining it, and I think that the Harry Potter analogy is a really good way to look at it, than that it, you know, being lucky isn't necessarily, like you said, you know, tripping over bags of gold or whatever, but it's being receptive and...
It's not buying the winning lottery ticket, it's knowing to buy the lottery ticket, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not that you necessarily know what your lucky numbers are. It's having that impulse of, I should really play the lottery today.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel. At least good luck works.
Yeah.
So what about bad luck? How does that work?
Well, Corey and I were talking about this earlier. And, you know, there are some people who say being positive brings about positive things and being negative brings about negative things. But then, you know, Corey was listening to, was it Velma?
I think Velma Nightshade was talking about this.
And how too much of that, and it leads to blaming the victim, which I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's still merit in that if you think negative, negative things are going to happen.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think Velma was necessarily going at it from a perspective of thinking positive has no effect or thinking negative has no effect. I think she was sort of issuing a cautionary warning,
right,
saying that making it all about that leads to a blame the victim mentality,
yeah,
very
it's,
easily.
It's definitely not all about that.
Right. I mean, I think there's a contributing factor that is that sort of what you're identifying?
Yeah. Well, to me, you can make your life better by having a more positive outlook. Like, for example, I have a friend who doesn't really enjoy her job, but she's been there 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just constantly kind of complaining about it and talking about it and, oh, I don't want to go, and dreading it, which I totally understand. Like, it was very justified.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and like through no prompting of anyone, she just, you know, the next year came and she was like, you know, it's the second year of being here and I'm done. You know, she said, but I can't quit. So I'm just not really going to think about it anymore. I'm just going to go do my job and that's that. And, you know, if you catch me bitching, just sort of say something and we'll move on to other topics. And, you know, I guess around 3 or 4 months went by and she's like, you know, this year is so much better because I'm not focusing on that negative. And to me, when you focus on the negative so much, you tend to amplify it.
Yeah, I could see that.
So it really did help her to not focus on the negative anymore. Mm-hmm. Even if you have a hard time finding the positive, if you can just sort of back away from it. Now, I'm not saying like that works in every single situation.
Right.
Like the extreme. Like, you know, if someone, the example you brought up was that sort of that blaming the victim thing, like, you mm-hmm. know, saying someone walking down the street and they're thinking negative thoughts and then they get raped, that is not their fault. That is not the negative thoughts. That's just someone being horrible.
Yes.
And, you know, that's different. I'm just saying in certain situations.
Right. In a situation where you do have control,
yes,
over your
and,
situation.
And your emotions.
Right.
And
your friend's job is a great example of,
yeah,
that. Because she had the power to quit at any time. She had the power to change that particular set of circumstances, but she chose not to. And mm-hmm. I think maybe that's where it enters in, is positive and negative thinking action is sort of amplified in your own choices.
Yeah, definitely.
Doesn't necessarily mean that it goes out and it suddenly draws, you know, not, you know, you're thinking horrible bad thoughts and a stampede of elephants runs you over. That's not really what happens. But, you know, thinking horrible negative thoughts, you know, you might wind up choosing to drink heavily one night, and that could lead to some serious consequences down the line. You know, you might then choose to stumble into a circus where there's stampeding elephants. So the elephant metaphor doesn't really work here, and we're drinking heavily.
But
tonight,
hopefully people understand what we're saying.
Right. But yeah, so I think that it can contribute. I don't think it necessarily always contributes, but
right. Sometimes things just happen.
Yes.
Whether they be good or bad.
Yes.
I mean, if anyone tried to tell me that my father's death or your mother's or your father's was, you know, because of something that we thought, then I would punch them in the face.
Right. Okay, so we've sort of gotten into what is luck and a little bit into can you have naturally good or bad luck. But you had an interesting point with having naturally good luck. You have a good illustration of that.
Yeah, actually, my mother has very good luck when it comes to contests and especially radio contests. She has won countless CDs, prize packs,
and concert tickets.
Concert tickets, an overnight trip to a theme park with the hotel paid for, the tickets paid for, food paid for, tickets to like plays, you know, the theater, stuff like that. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. She's just great at it. And I mean, it's like a running joke in our family. So
do you feel like that's something that it is sort of innate in her, that, I mean, she's not even trying, it just sort of happens?
She does not try, she just does it. She's like, oh yeah, this contest was run, so I called and I won. And, you know, that's how the story always goes.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know, so she has a consistent pattern of that. That's something I would look at and go, okay, there's something to it.
Well, I wonder though, I forget what that's called in science, confirmation bias. That's what it's called. When you only look at the wins and not the... Like, you only look at the ones that confirm your theory and not the ones that don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you have to kind of take every time she called into account.
Exactly.
But I wonder.
But I wonder. But, I mean, how many people do you know that's won more than one or two contests off the radio? You know, she's won at least 10, at least.
Right.
In, you know, the past 20 years.
Right. There's an aspect of luck and there's an aspect of you play the odds.
Right.
So I don't think your mom was playing the odds necessarily.
No. Because she doesn't go looking for them. Like, if she hears them on the radio, then...
And see, to me, that's luck.
Yeah.
That's she hears them. She gets that tip-off. She feels, yes, I need to call to the right time. Mm-hmm. She wins. And that, to me, altogether, is good luck.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. It's just... It's weird.
Yeah.
And it doesn't uncanny. Really... It doesn't really carry over, either. Because, you know, I rarely win any type of contest. And I enter a lot. Not necessarily radio, but like stuff on the internet, you know, like blog giveaways, stuff like that. And not a big winner.
It must skip a generation or something.
It must.
I wonder if she has always had that kind of luck or where that started in her life.
I don't know. I should ask her. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, on to the next question. If you're having a run of bad luck, can you change that? How?
What do you do? I don't know. See, I always said my dad was really unlucky too, which is interesting that you know, one lucky person married an unlucky person.
Mm-hmm.
He just had the worst luck when it came to jobs and money and just stuff like that.
Did he have an area of his life where he was lucky, did you feel like? Where things just naturally seemed to go right for him?
Not that I can think of, but that isn't...
That doesn't prove anything right. One or the other.
Right.
Because there might be... For all you know, every time he went fishing, he caught one.
Exactly. So. Yeah. I don't know. So it might be something else to ask my mother about, but...
If we're talking about changing luck,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of people who believe, and this is common in a lot of American folk magic, there are specific talismans that you can use.
Yeah.
That will change your luck for better. And
okay, so what are some of these? And of course, rabbit's feet.
Yes, rabbit's feet. The ones I did a hefty little chunk of research on for the show.
Ooh.
I did.
Look at you.
I really did. an unnatural amount of research for this. I like research. It just makes me...
I know, happy. You're a freak.
I really am. But I just love doing it. Like, look at all my notes. I'm happy I wrote notes. Rabbit's feet. Horseshoes.
Oh, yeah.
A big one. Lucky pennies or coins in general. There's a lot of... Oh, I totally forgot one aspect of those. Oh, we'll have to talk about that.
Okay.
Four-leaf clovers, of course. Lucky Buddha statues.
Hmm.
Do you know the ones that you rub the belly?
Yeah, I have one, actually.
Well, there you go. Those are not... Well, we'll get to that. We'll discuss that in a little bit.
Okay.
They're not as Buddha as you think.
Hmm.
So it was kind of fun to do some research on those. What else did we have? I found a whole bunch of, like, really interesting, unusual... good luck charms and a whole bunch of sort of bad luck things as well.
Okay. So, well, do you want to like discuss each little charm and then down the list?
Sure. Alrighty. Should we take a short break first?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we're going to take a short break first, play a couple of promos, and when we come back, we're going to get into lucky charms and talismans.
Hi, I'm J.O. Scully, host of Witchery of One, a periodic, that is to say, infrequent podcast that focuses on the experiences, practices, and opinions of one witch, me. Episodes can be found for download at my blog page, which is witcheryofone.libsyn.com, or you can do a search in iTunes. Stay tuned. You just might hear something new. And all blessings be.
I'm Oriah the Sphinx from Media Astra Actera, a podcast for witches, magicians, and others of the occult persuasion. Join me for a thought-provoking blend of magic, witchcraft, and natural science as we explore worlds both inner and outer, above and below. You can find the show on iTunes or at sphinx.libsyn.com. And I hope you'll join me in standing Media Astra Actera.
Okay.
All right.
We're back. Great. Talking about rabbit's feet, I guess we'll start with.
So, rabbit's feet.
Yes. Poor little rabbits.
Poor little rabbits. Not very lucky for the rabbits.
No.
As is often pointed out in any research I did, they always made a point of saying, no, it wasn't very lucky for the rabbit, was it?
Yeah. Well, I find that interesting since rabbits are pretty magical animals.
Mm-hmm.
Especially to me, of course.
Of course. You know, your freakish obsession with rabbits.
Not to Corey, of course.
Cut off all their feet. I'm kidding. I don't really mean that.
Round no, just stumpy stuff. Little rabbits. That's terrible.
That's probably even more terrifying than the rabbits I'm already scared of. Stump rabbit. Oh, goodness gracious. Okay. From what I could find on rabbit's feet, there are a lot of, there's just so much stuff.
Well, we talked about rabbits a little bit in our magical animals, didn't we?
We didn't do a magical animals episode.
Magical tools, that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But we do have magical animals.
Sorry.
Possibly in the Five Force. Interesting. Magical tools, yes.
Yeah, it was magical tools. And we talked about how they were magic, or they were lucky because, I guess, the animal was fast and it's fertile, so it's going to... You know, it produces a lot, so it's going to produce, you know, fast luck for you.
That's really funny because from the Lucky Mojo site, one of the things they say is, why is the rabbit foot lucky? I'm not sure. Rabbits are swift and they reproduce prolifically, but the luck of the rabbit foot is monetary and sexual. As far as I know, it is not related to swiftness or fertility.
Oh, well, la-di-da.
There's considerable evidence that the lucky rabbit foot is a remnant of an African clan totem. An importation somehow related to Br'er Rabbit, the famous protagonist of an African trickster god myth cycle. And she points out that in the Uncle Remus stories, Br'er Rabbit at one point makes a money mojo, which includes a pinch of collard seed, a piece of calamus root, and a rabbit's foot.
Really?
Br'er Rabbit himself carries a rabbit's foot.
I've read some Br'er Rabbit, and I didn't know I remember that. That's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I was really fascinated by that. There is a thesis I found by a woman named Betty Jo Chrysler Carr, who wrote her thesis on one of the early African-American writers, Charles Chestnut, who was writing in the post-Civil War era and actually made a very good living with his writing. And he wrote stories about hoodoo and conjuration to some extent.
Cool.
And one of them... she talks about he created a character called Uncle Julius, who was sort of an Uncle Remus, not knockoff, but a parallel for this.
Okay.
And he had something about a rabbit. He had Uncle Julius tell a story about a rabbit foot, and how you get the rabbit foot was you take the left hind foot of a graveyard rabbit killed by a cross-eyed man on the dark night in the full of the moon. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, what's a graveyard rabbit?
It's a rabbit caught in a cemetery.
Hmm.
And I found that showed up in a couple of different places.
Okay.
So why do you think, why would a rabbit caught in a cemetery be luckier than a rabbit caught somewhere else?
I don't know. My first instinct would be to say because they consort with the dead. They're comfortable in that area. Because, you know, you ever go to graveyards and... they're almost unnaturally quiet sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, animals don't necessarily...
It's like they know that there's a certain expectation of silence.
Yeah, well, and they know that there's dead things there, almost. To me. I mean, you can argue that, you know, you do see animals in graveyards, obviously, but not as often as one would think.
Mm-hmm.
At least the ones I've been to.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair enough. I don't have a whole lot to base it on other than...
Well, I mean, I do, you know, I used to live near like, really backwoods type graveyards. So, you know, and I do have a family one as well back, mm-hmm. you know, in my hometown, so...
So if the graveyard is unnaturally quiet, or maybe not unnaturally quiet, but is particularly quiet,
yeah.
and there's sort of a place of reverence, then why is that rabbit so special? What makes it lucky? Like, I think your instinct about it consorting with the dead,
mm-hmm.
consorting with the dead, I think that instinct is a good instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that there seem to be a couple of luck mojos that have to do with connecting to the dead or connecting to, I think like there's some that use bones, like bones and finger bones and things like that. You often hear dice called bones rather than bones.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there is a connection there. I'm not 100% sure what it is, but I think you're on the right track with it.
Did it say it had to be caught under the full moon?
One of the folklore sources did say something about catching it, on a dark night in the full of the moon.
Well, rabbits do come out on the full moon and, you know, mm-hmm. kind of, it's almost weird.
mm-hmm.
They seem to like dance under it kind of.
And there's a folklore source that that the writer of this particular thesis cites as sort of a source for where this tale comes from, saying that, you have to use the left hind foot of a graveyard rabbit killed in the dark of the moon.
Oh.
So it's interesting because there seems to be, it could be a full moon or it could be the dark of the moon, but it does seem to have something to do with a lunar cycle. Let's see. From Harry Hyatt, who wrote a huge compendium on hoodoo, he also found, his informant said that you would take a rabbit's left hind leg. The way he puts it is taken while the animal is still warm and sewn into a bag, should be carried with you at all times and kept under your pillow at night for luck. And then he had another informant that said you bury the right front foot of a rabbit in a cemetery, and after 9 days and nine nights, you disinter it and wear it on a chain or fashion into something similar.
Hmm.
There's definitely a death connection. Like, that's something that seems to be very important here.
Yeah.
So any other ideas why rabbit's feet might be lucky?
Maybe because they're hard to catch.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading something about the guy who catches the rabbit has to be cross-eyed.
Why?
I guess because it adds an extra layer of difficulty to it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And so, like, if all of this, it's sort of like Mr. Miyagi with the chopsticks and the fly.
Yeah.
And if everything falls into place, boom, then you've caught the fly, you've caught this rabbit in this really specific circumstance, and of course it's going to be magical.
That would make the dark of the moon make even more sense, since you have no moonlight to see by.
Right, it's only by luck that you catch it, therefore only by, all it can bring is good luck.
There we go.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's fair enough. Using a rabbit's foot usually involved carrying it with you as sort of a pocket mm-hmm. talisman.
I used to have one.
I did too. I wish I knew where mine was.
I think it was like a really popular thing to have with kids in the 90s, you know, that time.
Yeah. Maybe. I think it's always been popular.
You think
I think there's a certain age where kids think it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, not every kid thinks it's cool, but I think kids like us are like, oh, that's interesting. To use it, you have it in your pocket. You anoint it, I've seen usually with banban oil, which is hoodoo condition oil, made from, well, we'll get into what it's made from later on. You would anoint it, and every time you anoint it, you'd rub it, and that would provide luck. You'd have luck on your hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to rub it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of pet it, almost.
Yeah.
So morbid.
All right. So what's next on our list?
Yeah, what else can we talk about? Horseshoes.
Horseshoes. All right. Let's see. I found an article in a fairly old copy of Western Folklore Journal. It explains why a horseshoe might be lucky. And it was an interesting explanation because I had never heard this before.
Okay.
Okay, so... This is by Janine E. Talley in Western Folklore in 1972. The horseshoe as a bestower of luck is so frequently encountered that it has become cliché, but at the same time an isolated belief without a context. Barnett, her informant, made a comment that the mule has been pounding it full of luck, which provides not only the logic explaining why the horseshoe is full of luck, but also reveals that the luck is accumulative. So I thought that was really interesting, like, that the horse has been pounding it full of luck by walking on it, so you have to use a horseshoe that came from a horse.
Yeah, I have heard that, and I've also heard that you can't, like, it has to be one that's come off naturally.
Naturally fallen off the horse, yeah. I've heard that too. So maybe the horse really does pound it full of luck.
And so does that mean the horse is lucky? Like, why?
Well, think about how many cultures have worshipped horses, or worshipped horse gods of some kind. Like, the horses are sacred. You think about in ancient Greece, Poseidon was the god of the sea, but also the god of horses.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Horses were a common sacred animal in the ancient world.
Well, they were used a lot.
They're so important. I mean, it's the basis of, basis of travels, to trade. Some extent, trade, economy.
Yeah.
I mean, that you...
War.
Everything there, so much depends upon... my horse, a kingdom for a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I think that there's a reason that horses are lucky.
Okay.
Related to a sort of deeper, older magic, related directly to the horse. And then you can have iron, and it's iron.
Yeah.
Which is a powerful metal.
Yeah.
Magic. It dispels negativity.
Right.
What else do we have on the horseshoe?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, but I guess we can talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
That some people think you have to hang them upside down, and some people think you have to hang them right side up for them to be lucky.
Uh-huh. Horns up, horns down.
Yeah, and I've heard it both ways.
I have too.
I don't know.
When I hear about people talking about it horns down, they say that you can't hang it horns down because the luck will run out,
mm-hmm.
which I always think is interesting, and that you hold it, you do it horns up so that it holds the luck.
Right.
But then I've also heard people say that you hang it that way so it pours luck down on top of you
mm-hmm.
when you walk under it. So I don't know. I have no idea. I can't tell you what the right way to hang a horseshoe is.
I don't know. I'd be interested to hear from people who have actually grown up on, ranches and mm-hmm. stuff like that, like out in the Midwest and
mm-hmm.
deal with horses.
Yeah, I know it's very, very common and popular as a lucky charm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
like she said, it's almost become...
Cliche.
It's not even like a lucky charm anymore. It's just something people do.
Right. And it's almost one of those lucky charms that people don't think of as a lucky charm. They
right.
think of it as a decoration.
Right.
Which I think is very interesting.
I was actually out with a friend last night, and she was wearing a horseshoe necklace.
Did you point out and be like, oh, is that a lucky charm?
No, I just thought it was interesting.
Well, yeah. Was it points up or points down?
Up. But that's easier to hang on a necklace.
That's true. Point. Maybe more of an issue of practicality than real
meaning. And honestly, those were really popular for a little while, those necklaces.
Yeah, I've seen them on a couple of people. I know.
Sex and the City, it was on that for a while.
Oh, that's interesting.
Hmm.
They seem to be fairly lucky. prong-shaped talisman. Like, horns. Ah, that was something I thought was really, really good.
Yeah.
If you think about it, and then this is referred to as horns up, horns down. If you think about... One of the gestures to avert the evil eye is to make the horns at whoever is
right.
doing it, because you spear bad luck on those horns.
Oh.
So it's sort of like having your own personal bull to fight off bad luck. And I think that's a really neat way to look at it.
Yeah.
And in Vance Randolph's Ozark Magic and Superstition, we've referenced this on the site many times.
Yes.
He talks about you hanging up the horseshoe on a fireplace as opposed to by the door or even in the back of the chimney.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting. And that may have something to do with keeping witches out, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because we like to come down chimneys. We're like Santa Claus. this is sort of fun. If you, according to Randolph, many hill folk think that the man who finds a horseshoe with a closed end towards him will do well to leave it lay. If the open end is towards the finder, he sometimes spits on it and throws it over his left shoulder, a procedure which is supposed to bring good fortune. Or he may place it in a tree or a fence, saying, "Hang there, all my bad luck." In this case, whoever touches the hanging horseshoe falls heir to the misfortune of the man who placed it there.
Hmm, that is very interesting.
What do you think about that?
I don't know. Okay, I keep thinking of, not that this has anything to do with magic necessarily, but I keep thinking of the game of horseshoes
uh-huh.
and how that... developed, and if that has anything to do with anything.
It definitely takes a little luck, a little skill.
Yeah. I wonder.
It also shows that those were very, very common. If you can make a game out of something, a horseshoe is obviously not a not something so valuable that you can't handle throwing it around as part of a game.
Right.
All right. Next, we've got the lucky penny. Okay, so lucky pennies. What do we have on that?
Right. Well, let's see. From Vance Randolph again, we have the idea of paying for a knife, even if just a penny.
I've heard that, weirdly, of all places, in relation to Wicca.
Okay.
An athame.
Right.
It has to be bought. You cannot simply receive it as a gift.
I've never heard that.
I have indeed heard that.
That is interesting.
And therefore I am right. I've heard, because, and I think it may have something to do with this, a knife that's not paid for is likely to turn on whoever's handling it because they're not the rightful master of that knife, the rightful owner.
We talk about knife lore in and of itself, though.
Yeah, that's a whole other animal.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, yeah. So pennies, again. Also from Vance Randolph, the penny wart charm, which is you rub a wart with a penny and you give it to a child to spend.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard of that. That's actually lore in my family.
Mm-hmm.
But with ours, it's a man of the family holds out some change, and the child is supposed to pick the shiniest penny that you know that he thinks is the shiniest, and the child is supposed to keep it, and the wart will go away.
I'm totally trying that out. I love that.
I don't know why we have that. I just remember that from hearing. I remember hearing that in the car one time as we were driving to see my grandparents, and randomly, I don't know, it stuck with me.
Do you remember, like, back when we first started the show, and you were talking about, like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, I don't have any magical stuff in my family.
And, yeah, I remember some of it now.
And, like, you get, I think almost every episode we've come up with something.
You think? I don't think every episode.
If not, I think it averages out. Like, this one you've had two. You've had your mom with her luck. And you've had your...
Well, I meant, like, actual old wives' tales that are in my family. And that's one I can think of.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think, didn't you say something, but you had... Well, we'll get to that another time.
Okay.
Paints, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. But that'll be another episode.
Yeah.
That was a teaser. Be listening in October.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway. So, okay. So, the penny wart charm.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? From Ironwood. In the Lucky Amulet Archive. She has lots of lucky coins. Excuse me. Usually embossed with other lucky symbols like clovers, swastikas, horseshoes, etc.
Mm-hmm. Horseshoes come back there.
Yeah. And should we talk about the swastikas? About how?
Yeah.
I think it was Greek.
I know it's common in India.
Okay. Well, it was in Greece as well because it was one of Athena's symbols.
Okay.
Like, I had a big thing for Athena when I was younger, so...
Really? Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
I learned a lot about her, so... What does that mean, sir?
No, you strike me as, like, you've always been a junior pagan.
Oh, okay. So. I thought you meant because she is the goddess of war.
No, I was thinking goddess of wisdom.
Oh, well, good.
And she gave her dad a big headache. Okay. Oh, snap. Did he say that? I think he did.
That just happened.
Okay. So, yeah, so the swastika, when it's spinning, I think it's when it's spinning sunwise, when it's spinning clockwise, it's good luck. But then Hitler and the Nazis flipped it, made it spin counterclockwise. But yeah, it predates the Nazis vastly, vastly.
Yes.
Predates the Nazis.
It did not always mean
death.
Yeah, to death to Jews. Ugh, awful.
No.
Yeah.
No, it was originally intended as a lucky symbol and got perverted.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate because now, even if you try to reclaim it and use it as a lucky symbol, it's always going to have that tinge of negative connotation.
I agree.
Which is sort of sad. So, personally, I would not use that symbol just
right.
Because it's going to be painful for quite a while.
Yeah, I agree. Ironwood also says... See, silver dimes used in gambling luck mojos with pre-1963 silver dimes being lucky, the mercury dimes from 1916 to 46 being especially lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my dad collected coins, mm-hmm. and he had a few mercury dimes. Well, my grandparents still have his coin collection, and I was the only one of the children that did coin collecting. So
maybe you can still get those. Those are amazing hoodoo talismans.
Yeah.
There's a hoodoo talisman where you tie one with red thread around your ankle,
mm-hmm.
and it protects you from foot track curses. And if it turns black, then you know somebody tried to hex you, but it blocked it.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I like that.
Have you seen the new pennies that have come out?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, they have like a shield on the back now.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, I wonder if I have one to show you. But
that's something I've kind of wondered about, is there's this strong urge to use, you know, these Mercury dimes and these Indian head pennies that I've seen in Hoodoo a lot.
I have an Indian head penny upstairs.
They're really, like, you nail them to your doorframe and they keep away. They're supposed to be law keep away. They keep you from running into legal troubles. So one of the things that I think Catherine Ironwood points out is that a lot of people who, you know, deal illicit drugs, if you go in there, you see pennies all around the doorway.
Huh.
So that was really interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so off of coins, not off of coins totally, but off of Ironwood, let's see what Judith Giles has to say.
Oh, I love her first one.
Okay, she says, to leave coins such as spare change or replica coins on different doorsteps in the magical belief that whatever you put forth will return to you 2, 3, or 7-fold.
I love that idea. Now, I don't necessarily get the 2, 3, 4, 7-fold, whatever, but the idea of spreading generosity around randomly,
mm-hmm.
it just fills my heart with gladness. Like, thinking about, you know, how many foot track or crossing spells are laid at people's doorsteps, right? It feels like, oh, it's all negative, negative, negative stuff.
Yeah.
But you could do this. You could leave pennies at strangers' doorsteps. And then the next day they find these lucky pennies.
Because you leave them heads up.
Because you leave them heads up for them. They have these lucky pennies, so they get the luck. And it's, you know, it could come back to you. You spread around generosity, so generosity can be returned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't necessarily believe in a law of return particularly, but I do think that there's something to, you know, do good things happen.
Yeah.
Love that spell. Yeah. I just think it's neat.
That is neat. She also says that a coin minted in your birth year is lucky, which I've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually used pennies in our birth year as signifiers.
Yes.
In our witch bottles.
Yes.
So.
Shh, don't tell. What else do we have?
Well, there's always the penny rhyme, which we have talked about before, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think in the context of luck.
Yeah. Do you want to tell them what the rhyme is?
See a penny, pick it up all day long, you'll have good luck.
Yay. Which I've also heard as see a pin and pick it up.
That's interesting to me.
And I found
as in a writing pin or a
like a
pin,
straight
like
pin,
a push
like
pin.
Like a push pin or straight pin, the kind of, like a hat pin or something like that. And okay. I found that referenced a couple of places as well.
Hmm.
So that one I'm just not sure. I'm not sure.
Like which one evolved from which?
Right. Like, because there's such a strong coin luck connection that I feel like that's the correct one, the first one. But then the pin makes some degree of sense to me, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, one, you're not going to let anybody step on a pointy pin,
right.
So you've done something good. Two, it's just seems like it's the kind of thing that might be magical if you find it. But I could just be imagining that.
No, I see that. Something else that I thought of when it comes to coins, because my friend used to have one in her room. You know, they're like an Eastern thing. And I mean Eastern as in the world, not the U.S. But, I think it's a toad, and it has the coin in its mouth, like the foreign coin. And you're supposed to put your change there, and it's supposed to, you know, like, bring you more money. Have you ever heard of that?
I have not, but that's
really
amazing.
Yeah, it's like you're supposed to put the Chinese coin in its mouth. I don't know. I could be getting that totally wrong, and I apologize
to any
Chinese people if I am.
No, I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
I can see sort of how that would work.
Mm-hmm. But she had one in her room, and she would, you know, constantly drop her change there. And if she needed anything, she'd take it and take a little bit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, very cool. I love that. I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. All right, anything more on coins?
Nope.
All right, what do we have next?
Four-leaf clovers.
All right, so what makes them lucky? Why are four-leaf clovers lucky?
Because they're unusual.
Okay. What does that make them? Why is there luck involved?
I don't know. I remember as a kid, you know, like searching for them. Maybe because you have to like put forth the effort to find them. You know,
sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you just look down and there it is.
Yeah, I had that happen. That's something I've been able to do pretty frequently.
Really?
Yeah. Like if I wander into a patch of clover and look down, usually within a few minutes I can find a four-leaf clover. It's just one of those things that, like, I don't have a lot of trouble doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being raised as a Catholic, the clover was used as a symbol for sort of divinity. I remember getting a lesson on, you had the three leaves of the three leaves of a normal clover were faith, hope, and charity or love. Faith, hope, and love, I think. And then, yes, faith, hope, and love. Thank you, notes. Faith, hope, and love. But then the fourth is for grace or luck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting some special favor.
Okay.
Because of that. So there was this sort of interesting magical element combined with religion in that version of it.
Yeah, I never heard anything like that. It was always just, yay, you found a four leaf clover. That's lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being that. And then we dry them in books. And
mm-hmm.
I used to carry one in my wallet with me. And
that's funny. So did Kat Ironwood.
Really?
I was doing research and she talks about how she keeps one in her wallet.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. This is when I was pretty young, too.
Always been a little witchy. The Athena worshiping, clover carrying,
rabbit's foot rubbing,
pointy hatted thing. All right.
Well, going back to the religion thing, you could also kind of look at it as the three leaf clover being the Trinity.
Yes.
You know, which, you know, I don't necessarily see, but
like, that's crap. Get your Jesus out of my clovers.
But then, what would the fourth be? Oh, grace, representing God's grace or favor.
Mm-hmm. That's the, because you'd have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's see. What else is in our lovely notes? May have a sacred connection to, connotation to Druids.
Yes.
But that is speculative.
Yes. I found a few references to the shamrock or the four-leaf clover having some sacred connotation to Druids. I didn't find any primary source material on that.
Okay.
Like, there was nothing.
Like, people sort of reverse engineering the meaning.
Exactly. Where it's like, well, it's, you know, it's Irish and it's kind of magical. Druids must have been involved.
So,
wedge it together. And I'm not saying that there's not actually a connection. I just couldn't find it. So, if you're a Celtic scholar, please feel free to let me know that. I would love to know that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything that was primary. Okay. I also found in research Sir John Milton, not John Milton of Paradise Lost, but Melton, M-E-L-T-O-N, wrote in 1620 that if a man walking in the fields find any four-leaved grass, he shall in a small while after find some good thing.
Hmm.
Which is basically to say, you'll have good luck. Something good will come along. And then in Patrick Gaynor's Witches, Ghosts, and Signs, Folklore of the Southern Appalachians, he mentions a slight expansion on this. Finding a five-leaf clover brings bad luck, but you can give the bad luck away by giving it to another person, and he will have good luck.
Hmm.
Which is a really interesting variation, because usually when you give away something like that, you give away your bad luck.
Right.
As we saw in the Randolph example with the horseshoe. But in this one, he says you can give away that five-leaf clover, and you get rid of your bad luck, and you give them good luck by doing it.
Very interesting.
Very, very, very strange.
You would think a five-leaf clover wouldn't be bad luck.
But there's something about it that is.
Because it has, like, you know, like, I would think points at a star.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, for all we know, that might be a negative connotation for some people.
Yeah.
Especially if you're coming from that Trinitarian.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, oh, it's a star. Oh, that seems vaguely pagan. We don't want anything pagan in the Catholic Church. Never mind those green men on the wall. You just move along your business there. all right. So the final big thing we'll be talking about in amulets are lucky Buddhas.
Hmm.
Now, I found all sorts of neat stuff on the lucky Buddhas, but basically, just to sum up, the Buddhas that you see kind of come in a variety of shapes and sizes, but mm-hmm. there's one type of Buddha. He's really round-faced, he's bald, he's fat. And
usually smiling.
Always smiling, yeah. Always laughing. Huge ears, if you look
at
it.
That's the one I had.
Yeah, really big ears. And he almost always has a little sack with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he is Hotai, or Hote, which is the laughing Buddha. And he's actually a derivation of a Chinese luck god. So he's not a Buddha in the sense of He was an enlightened sage who came to, who was incarnated on Earth, became a bodhisattva, and die and will deliver teachings. He's actually considered what they call a future Buddha.
Oh.
Which is that he will incarnate at some point.
Okay.
But for right now, he's sort of a derivation of this Chinese luck god. And then the bag is are all the gifts that he could distribute. So he's sort of like Santa Claus in that way. I actually saw him compared to Santa Claus several times. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And to use his statues, when you see him, you rub his belly or you rub his head.
Yeah, I've always heard rub the belly. Mm-hmm. I used to do that every morning before school.
And then one of the things I found out about Hotei Buddha, who is known... by the way, my Japanese is terrible, and my Chinese is not any better. But in Chinese, he's apparently known as Maitreya.
Where is that?
Maitreya. I can't even touch it. But from the Taoist.net website, they say, in Chinese, we say that this particular Buddha has a big stomach. That's why he's so fat. And can therefore tolerate anything. Little kids climb all over him, and it's okay. You can take advantage of him, and it won't make him mad. The English equivalent of a big stomach in this context is a big heart. This Buddha is a Buddha of big heart.
Like that.
I love that. I think it's just so neat.
So maybe if you can do whatever and doesn't make him mad, then you can rub his belly for luck, and he can give you some of his or something like that.
Right. He's got so much. He's a god of abundance. He has so much joy, so much. That's why he's always laughing.
Right.
Which is, I think, really, really neat.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that one.
I love that.
Yeah. So now let's talk a little bit about bad luck.
Okay. You know, it's funny. 13 has always been lucky for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got married on the 13th. I got engaged on the 13th. Which, you know, you could argue, like, those were on purpose. But mm-hmm. I don't know.
You had 13 kids.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, I've always liked the number 13.
Yeah, I've got nothing against it.
I guess... it was like a reaction to everybody being afraid of it. And I was always like, well, it's going to work for me. And it did.
Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with the fact that you've always been a witch. Pointy hat. Coin magic. Things like that.
Yeah.
All right. There are lots of... I mean, there's just so, so many bad luck superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've filled books with these things.
Yeah.
So I just went through and found a couple that I thought were interesting. From Richard Dorson's Buying the Wind, he was talking about seafaring bad luck. He said, it's bad luck to turn back for anything you've forgotten once you're on deck. They talk about, like, sailors forgetting the plug of tobacco they would normally chew all day in their cheek. And then once they were on deck, if they'd forgotten it, they didn't go back.
Mm.
They just went all day without it because it's bad luck to go back down.
Wonder why.
I don't know. I don't. That's the thing. Like, with good luck, I can break down reasons right and left. Bad luck, I have no idea. Most of the time, I cannot understand where a bad luck superstition comes from.
Right.
Sometimes I can, but it's not usual. Also bad luck to wear black oilskins or gloves on a boat. I'm guessing just black is a bad luck color.
I guess so.
And bad luck to curse the sea, which that seems fairly obvious.
Yeah.
You don't want to, you know, it's like cursing your mom.
Yeah.
You don't want to.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. All right.
Let's see, from Randolph again. It is bad luck to burn sweepings or shavings made inside the house.
And that one I kind of thought might be related to foot track magic, because you walk all over the dust, so if you burn your own foot track,
okay.
Could do some harm.
Or your own hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
mean, so that's speculative, but it's reasonable. Yeah. Anything to me. From Maryland Folklore by George G. Carey. Again, bad luck to turn back for something you've forgotten. That didn't have anything to do with being on a boat. That was just in general. And this one I like. This is not bad luck. This is good luck. But good luck to stir cake batter in only one direction.
I have never heard that.
I think it's neat.
It is interesting, though.
Yeah. If you're a kitchen witch out there and you want to experiment with that and see if your cakes turn out better if you stir in just one direction, we'd love to hear.
Yeah. I wonder what direction. Because I've always heard, you know, clockwise for bringing things to you, counter for banishing.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I have no idea. I think it's one of those, like, whatever direction you start in, you keep going.
Right.
And then there was a whole bunch in the Patrick Gaynor Appalachian folklore. I'll just throw a couple of them out there. A rabbit crossing your path will bring good luck. It's the opposite of a cat. Lane is making the happy, dancy gesture.
Well, I've always interpreted that as good luck, and I've never heard that from anybody. That was just like my own personal type of thing. But like I said, I've always found rabbits magical. So when I saw one, it was almost like a sign from the goddess, kind of, to me.
Let's see. Touching the hump of a hunchback person is good luck. I've found that many, many places, that doing that was supposed to be good luck.
I have heard that before.
But it's
weird.
It's a very strange thing. I think actually Victor Hugo mentions it in The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so. When you return to a house for something that has been forgotten, you sit down in a chair before leaving again to avoid bad luck.
There that is again.
I know. I think that's very interesting. 13 people at the table brings bad luck.
I've heard that. I actually did a paper on that once.
So, I don't know, what would you just set an extra place to counteract that?
I don't know. It's supposed to be because there were 13 people at the Last Supper, so.
Right. Right.
The first person to rise will have bad luck.
Mm-hmm. The Judas.
Yeah. So I guess whoever, yeah, I guess you could set an extra place.
Mm-hmm. Passing under a ladder, bad luck.
Yeah.
Hear that a lot.
Why, though? Get paint spilled on you?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think I've ever understood that superstition.
No.
And yet I avoid walking under ladders.
I do too.
Don't know why. Bad luck when you're playing cards. It's bad luck to pick your cards up one at a time as they're being dealt. You're supposed to wait till they're all dealt and then pick them up.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's, you know, if you watch poker players, I think that that's probably something that they do, actually.
Yeah.
For luck or no, it might just be one of those things where they don't want to react to each card as they get it, because then it's easier to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Bad luck to postpone a wedding. Mm-hmm. Bad luck to change a baby's name. Bad luck to spill ink. Bad luck to burn bread. Bad luck to count the carriages in a funeral procession. Bad luck to count the tines in a comb. And bad luck to count the number of stars in the sky.
Hmm.
A lot of counting.
Yeah.
Counting is bad. Being good at math curses you. This is what we've discovered through years and years. This is why we were English majors.
That's right.
It was to avoid bad luck. It's not true. We were just lazy and bad at math.
I'm just bad at math, yeah. Well, I'm kind of curious now. We didn't really have this like on the agenda, but we should talk about like things that are specific to us that we feel like have for, that we consider good luck or bad luck.
Okay.
So like, can you think of anything?
Oh, goodness.
Can I go first?
Yes.
I have a few. Okay, awesome. One, I have to put on my right shoe before my left shoe, or I feel weird the rest of the day. And I'm pretty sure we talked about this in the Omens podcast, but yeah, I read it once in a book that it was bad luck to put your left shoe on first, and so I've always done it on the right ever since then. Mm. Even when I'm trying on shoes in like a store, it has to be the right one, or it feels weird.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Well, the rabbit thing. Those are always good luck for me. Used to be seeing deer was a good luck charm, but now they're so frequent in my backyard, I'm just like, hey, deer, you know, you're just a deer right now.
Oh, deer. Maybe you're just constantly full of good luck now.
Maybe.
Well, I know one that I abide by that I know a lot of people do is the salt. If you spill salt,
yes,
you throw some over your left shoulder.
I do that one.
And that's supposedly to blind the devil. Which I don't know why you'd want to, like, piss the devil off if he's behind you, but all right. Whatever. But no, I always do that if I spill salt. That's the main one I can think of. I do tons of stuff like that, though.
But do you have any that are personal to you and not necessarily to everybody?
I always either hold my breath or bow my head when I'm passing a graveyard.
Now, yeah, we used to hold our breath when going by a graveyard. We used to also hold our breath when going over a bridge.
Oh, through a tunnel was what I was going to...
Tunnels were fun for us. Like, my mom grew up in the north, and I don't know if it was only, like, the specific part of the country that she grew up in, or if it's the north in general. I don't know. Like I said, we're southern. I don't know. So, but whenever we would go through a tunnel, we'd always honk and, like, flash our lights, and it was, like, a fun thing. I don't know. It's silly. Mm-hmm. But, and she still does it. You know, we went on a trip this past month, and we went through a tunnel, and she was like, yay, honk, honk.
That's funny.
But yeah, whenever we went over a bridge with water underneath.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it was just over land, it didn't matter. But bridge over water, you would hold your breath.
I think that's sort of like the, you know, lifting your feet up as you go over the train track.
Yep, used to do that too.
Yeah, and I still do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Preferably not when I'm driving, but.
Isn't that funny?
So those are definitely ones that I have. Holding the breath through a tunnel, feet up over the train track, holding my breath or bowing my head as I pass a graveyard.
Why hold your breath by a graveyard? Like, I have an explanation from some family member or something.
The explanation I was given was because the dead can sense your breath and will follow you home.
Yes.
Is that the one you have to?
Or try to steal it. Like, steal your breath, you know, because...
Yeah. Don't leave cats alone with babies.
Yes.
That's one that I've got kind of a 50-50 medical / superstition. There's the stealing the breath thing. There's also the fact that cats will lay on a baby's head because it's very warm.
Right. Or their chest and suffocate them.
Yeah, and suffocate them. So that's just a whole other thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I guess we can just move on. Now we're going to talk about unusual luck charms or stuff that isn't as widely known, I guess.
Yeah, and most of these come from Cat Ironwood's Lucky Amulet Archive.
Okay.
There's all sorts of neat things on that. One of my favorite was Little Magnetic Scotty Dogs.
Yeah, I've never heard of this one.
I didn't until I saw this on our website, but they're totally cute. You would love them.
And do you keep both of them together?
I think so, from what I could understand.
Okay.
So, and maybe it's just that magnetism drawing good luck thing.
Interesting. Let's see, next is pigs. Mm-hmm. Like a little pig figurine that you keep with you.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have two because we used to play
Pass the Pigs.
Pass the Pigs, yeah. But I never saw them as like good luck charms.
I can see it, like, you know, being a hog and slop, you know, being, that's a real Southern expression, by the way.
That's a polite way to say that. We always say pig and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy with that pig and shit.
Yeah. So, you know, you think about a pig and be happy and the worst of conditions kind of a thing. And you know, fat, prosperous animal.
Okay. Well, they're very intelligent, too. They're smarter than dogs.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's the... And I know... And I can't grab my primary source right here and right now, but I know that they were sacred to some of the ancient Celts and several of the ancient... Any basically non-Middle Eastern culture held them fairly high.
Let's see. What else? Holy stones. Now, I have heard this one, definitely. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of, like, naturally occurring things with holes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or even I've heard coins with holes, too. Yes. So.
And that seems to have some otherworldly thing. Like, I know there's the whole, you hold a holy stone up to your eye and you can see fairies. You can see the otherworldly creatures. And there are folk cures where if you pass someone through a hole in a tree or a hole in a big stone, they can cure them of whatever they're... And like, children were often passed through, like, blackberry brambles that had looped onto the ground.
Uh-huh.
And they would pass them under these brambles so that they could be cured of whatever they were being stricken by. So that's... It makes sense to me in sort of a folkloric way.
Okay.
Knots in your hair. My mom always told me that meant that the elves or the fairies have been playing in your hair at night.
Oh, that's so cute. Mm-hmm.
And
so they were
braiding it and tying little knots in it. And you have luck the next day.
Neat.
Yeah.
Because the fairies deigned to come play with you.
Yeah. And so they're playing with you in your dreams, kind of a thing.
Very cool. I like that explanation a lot.
I did too.
Makes me have fonder memories of my mom yanking my hair out. It was so dangly when I was younger.
Stupid fairies. All right. Oh, this one I've seen tons of places. If you put your clothes on backwards or inside out, you leave them that way for the rest of the day. If you don't, then you will have bad luck. But if you do, you have good luck. I think that's really interesting.
Me too.
Because you'd think, like, well, no, it's kind of embarrassing. But, you know, it makes sense because you've done something unusual.
So, but it has to be accidental. You can't just, you know.
Exactly. It has to come out of an accidental action. And if you do that, and you sort of take ownership of it.
Right.
Then good luck. Next.
Lucky spiders. I've never heard of this.
Yeah. I found this was again on Cat Ironwood's page. And she has like postcards where people have like, you know, good luck postcards. And they have pictures of spiders. So I don't. No, I mean, it makes sense. You would catch luck in the web.
Well, I've heard... The only luck thing I've heard surrounding spiders is that it's bad luck to kill one in your home.
Mm-hmm.
I do anyway, because spiders freak me out, and they're usually fiddlebacks, you know, or brown recluses. That's what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Which can, you know, lead to horrible things if they bite you. So, sorry, spiders, but and luck, but I kill them. So
you've got enough deer. So it's counteracting. It's all
and rabbits back there. I mean, I don't mess around with poisonous spiders.
Yeah.
So
fair enough. What else?
Rattlesnake rattles.
Mm-hmm.
Like just the rattle part?
Yeah. I mean, it makes as much sense as a rabbit's foot to me, really.
Yeah.
So it's an animal charm. It's got a little bit of an unusual thing going on. How many animals do you know that have a rattle?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Black-eyed peas on New Year's.
That is very odd.
That's a southern thing.
Yes, it is.
Just eat your black-eyed peas and your greens, your cornbread on New Year's Day, and you have good luck the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so good.
Aren't they supposed to be like the first thing you eat, the black-eyed peas?
I just know you're supposed to eat them on New Year's Day.
Okay.
However, what you're saying makes total sense because there's that first footing concept which comes from the British Isles, particularly Scotland, which is that you want the first person that crosses your doorstep on New Year's, preferably like at 12:01 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
to be a tall, dark man. And so if you think about it, black-eyed peas are kind of like these little dark peas. So it does make some degree of like really weird, skewed sense.
Speaking of New Year's traditions and superstitions, there's another one I remember from my childhood that we used to do. The first thing you were supposed to say after the clock clicked over was rabbit, rabbit. And it was supposed to bring you luck for the rest of the year.
I know nothing about that, but I'm going to have to look into it.
This is going
to
sound really strange, but I think, okay, Nickelodeon used to have like little bits of trivia between shows,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pretty sure that's where I heard it from.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think you're just obsessed with rabbits.
I think I may be. That might be why I remembered it, but I don't know. That's weird. Yeah, please look into that and tell me I'm not crazy. Okay, what else? Elephants. With the trunks up, mm-hmm. in particular.
Trunks up in the air.
Yeah, I used to have one.
Yeah. I still do have one.
Do you?
Yes, it was given to me by a friend of mine from India.
Cool.
He gave me this little brass elephant with the trunk up.
Mine was just a teeny little charm. I think it was actually for a bracelet or a necklace or something. And, you know, I'd heard from someone, elephants with their trunks up are good luck. So
mm-hmm.
I think it kind of has that same thing with horseshoes. With, you know, the trunk up, it keeps the luck in somehow. Or
I could see that.
Yeah.
All right. Hand and eye amulets. Seen those? Those are the one. They're often Turkish. Or sometimes see them as gypsy
mm-hmm.
medallions. They'll usually be blue.
Aren't there some from, I want to say Mexico, maybe just some part of South America?
Possibly.
That are those milagros?
Yeah, the milagro hands. But those I think are used slightly differently.
Okay.
Those would be. If you had a broken arm and you wanted it healed, you would offer that milagro to a specific saint. It would be help with that healing. Whereas these are just flat hands sort of done as like a stop. Like sort of stop in the name of love hand
mm-hmm.
with an eye in the center of it to deflect the evil eye.
Okay.
So that's kind of how those work. Penises and vulvas.
Oh my.
Indeed. Ain't nothing luckier than that.
Why? Just because of the fertility?
I guess so. Because, I mean, there's a reason they call it getting lucky. Fair enough.
Yeah, that much more to say about that.
And then charm bracelets.
Hmm.
I think are fun. People carry those around and even call them charm bracelets. And
yeah.
They don't necessarily believe in or think of them as magic, but that's what they're doing is they're carrying around little magic totem symbols.
Yeah.
It's like you're saying with the Sex and the City thing, you know, they're using these things as fashion accessories.
Right.
They have something more significant going on.
All right. Well.
All right. Well, that's Lucky Charms. Wow. We've talked quite a lot about those.
Yeah, we have.
Yes, we're going to take a little break. Then right after that, we're going to come back and we'll have witchcraft.
All right.
Hi, this is Kathleen, the hostess of Borealis Meditation, Geology for Pagans. Geology is the study of the earth, so what better subject for pagans? Join me to learn about minerals, rocks, and other interesting facts and theories about the earth. I can be found at Podbean, on iTunes, and Podcast Alley. Or just come on over to the blog at borealismeditation.blogspot.com.
My name is Jillian, and I am inviting you to join me on Iron Powaka Radio for a journey into random topics and spontaneous observations about spirituality, nature, and navigation through life, all from a girl with a rather wicked perspective. You can find my adventures at ironpowaka.com and download me at iTunes. So take some time out of your own mind and step into my collective. Iron Powaka Radio is tuned in to turn on.
Okay, today we're going to be talking about how to make a money bowl. And this isn't really in the vein of what I usually talk about, but, you know, you're still crafting something, so away we go. Corey and I have actually done this before. I still have it in my kitchen. And basically you gather a small bowl or plate or jar, whatever works for you. And I think the typical thing you want to have is a lodestone. But I used a magnet from my fridge. Get it, win it up. So, and you'd place 3 pennies. Was it, what oil was it?
I think we used, we may have used Crown of Success.
I think we did, actually.
No, just because we didn't have any, like, fast. No, actually, it might have been Van Van. We may actually have used Van Van for that.
Okay.
Because I did have some of that on hand.
Yeah. I was thinking Fast Luck, but I didn't think we had that on.
Yeah, we didn't.
Okay. So, but you could use any of those, mm-hmm. I would think.
Attraction.
Yeah.
Oil. Money attraction. Money oil.
Yeah. You know, be creative. And so you anoint the 3 oils and you, I mean, the 3 pennies. And you just keep your change there, you know, just your extra change and kind of feed it a little bit. You know, when you need it, you have it. And it's, you know, it's supposed to bring you more money in the long run.
Now, is it supposed to actually bring you more money, or is it supposed to help you hold on to the money you get? Or
I would think both.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you know, so you're never start. It's what I keep thinking of is it's the magical version of take a penny, leave a penny. You know?
Okay.
But it's always your money, not, you know, strangers.
Not gas station money.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, there's not really much to say about it. But it does go back to the whole, you know, coins and luck. And
should you feed the magnet or the lodestone with more oil periodically?
I would say so. I haven't, but
there's a difference between should you and do you.
Exactly.
Okay.
I actually have something else in my bowl at the moment. It's a big marble egg that I got for Easter.
It's fertility.
Yeah.
Why not? Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. I like them. I kind of used to collect them a little bit. My dad got me one randomly mm-hmm. on a trip somewhere, and so I've liked them ever since.
Have you noticed that you've gotten a lot more eggs in your refrigerator or anything? Like,
no.
When you buy eggs, do you hold on them? Hold on to them for a while?
I do, actually. We have a really hard time throwing away eggs that go bad.
So see, it's working. It's great.
I know. But yeah, it's a really simple way to, you know, do a money attraction spell.
Yeah, it sounds like it's vaguely related to that thing you were talking about, mm-hmm. the frog
yes.
with the coin in its mouth.
The Chinese mm-hmm. dealy.
That you're not sure if it's Chinese?
Not sure. Pretty sure it is.
So you've just insulted people again. No, it sounds like that's a fairly common practice then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very cool. Well, thank you, Lane.
No problem.
That was a short little segment. We're going to bounce right on into Spelled Out. Okay, for Spelled Out today, we're going to be looking at Van Van Oil. Now, this is a hoodoo condition oil. It's also found in a couple of other magical paths. And it's used to anoint all kinds of lucky amulets, including lodestones, horseshoes, and rabbit's feet. The basic recipe of hoodoo oil involves using the essential oils of 5 wild Asian grasses. And those are lemongrass oil, citronella oil, vetiver oil, palmarosa oil, and gingergrass oil. The one you would use the most of is lemongrass oil. The next most would be citronella, and then you would use sort of minuscule amounts of the other 3.
Why is that?
The lemongrass is the most potent of the ones. It's also the ones easiest to get for the right price.
Okay.
And then citronella is also fairly common, mm-hmm. fairly easy to get. The gingergrass is actually kind of hard to find, and there are a lot of Van Van versions that are basically lemongrass, maybe some citronella.
Oh.
So
really look at what you're buying.
Look at what you're buying. But to be fair, I mean, even if you just get a lemongrass citronella version, you still got a kind of Van Van oil. It will still function. It's just better if you can get at least three of those into it.
Okay.
And getting lemongrass, citronella, and vetiver is not too hard. Or lemongrass, citronella, and palmarosa. But if you get all five, that's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do that, when you make the main batch, you just blend the oils together and, you know, shake them up every day for a week to 2 weeks. And when you're done, you can add some dried lemongrass leaves or some crushed pyrite crystals. That's the fool's gold,
mm-hmm.
which is you know, shiny. Just has the sort of a it's lucky, but it's not necessarily. It's not like real gold. Real gold has this other sort of magical significance, this alchemical like purity and a deeper meaning. Whereas pyrite is much more of like a quick luck. It's
okay.
Quick turnaround.
I can see that.
It draws luck, love, and prosperity. Despite the name, Van Van has no vanilla in it. That's apparently a very common misconception. People think that Van Van has to have vanilla. And I believe somebody somewhere was pointing out that Anariva oil, Van Van oil, smelled like vanilla. Which kind of makes me question the validity of that oil.
Yeah, because the lemongrass would be pretty...
pretty potent, and yeah, it is. It's very potent. Actually, the lemongrass and the citronella are very powerful.
Yeah, I love the way that smells.
You sometimes also find it called Hindu grass oil or Henry's grass oil.
Okay.
And sometimes you can even find it in Near Eastern markets or Indian markets. You can find you can actually find a fair number of magical supplies in international markets. Like if you go to your local Mexican grocery or your local, and if you've got a local Pakistani grocery or a local Indian grocery, you can find quite a lot.
Hmm.
You know, incense, obviously, all sorts of stuff like that. Candles in your Mexican grocery, you can find lots of neat candles.
Yeah.
So, all right. You can use the dried botanicals of these if the oils are not available, but for most of them, it's going to be easier to find the oils than the dried, lemongrass being the exception to that.
Mm-hmm.
Judica Isle suggests that you could use patchouli, which is another wild Asian grass, and add a little oomph to the recipe. I suspect you could also use it if you didn't have one of these grasses. It might add a little boomp. It's a very musky herb,
mm-hmm.
And vetiver is very musky, as well as palmarosa. They're both fairly musky. So I can see the possibility of substitution. I'm not actually vouching for that particular substitution. One, because I don't really like patchouli.
I don't either.
And two, because I've never used it. So, you used it in this recipe. So, I don't know the efficaciousness of it. All right, so why does it work? Well, first of all, lemongrass and all citrus grasses have a powerful cut and clear effect. If you think about how many lemon scented cleaning agents there are out there, they just seem to make things cleaner. Lemons themselves have antibacterial and antimicrobial properties. And can be a potent preservative in small doses. If you think about, like, if you buy sliced bagged apples,
yes.
Usually they've been treated with at least some sort of lemon derivative,
yes.
To prevent the oxidization and browning. So the lemongrass, while not related to lemon, has a very strong lemon scent.
Yes.
So there's that, you know, cuts through negativity and clears it away. Citronella does something very similar. You can actually think about this in terms of what do most people use citronella for?
Keeping bugs away.
And bugs are bad, right?
Right.
So it keeps away bad stuff.
Okay.
So it repels all those things that would try to suck your blood and make you unhappy. So it's good for that. Both of those grasses have that clearing away effect and that protective, to some extent, just getting rid of badness. Palmarosa and ginagrass, which are actually from the same plant, the Cymbopogon martinae. Probably butchered that Latin, actually, are both very musky and have a sort of sexual connotation. So if you think of something being that bright, clean, but also sexy thing going on, it's not hard to imagine luck entering into that. If you
right.
think about, like, James Bond in a casino, you know, he's very well put together, very clean and organized, and he's also a little sexy and musky and manly. He's going to win the cards every time. He's going to get the right hand. Vetiver is the muskiest of all of them, with very strong earthy tones. Earth, of course, having connections to abundance and prosperity. If you think of, like, fertile black soil planted with seeds that grow into crops, is, of course, very, very, it's lucky mm-hmm. to be able to eat that next year. And again, strong sexual currents. You know, you have sex plus money plus nothing standing in your way. That's it. It's pretty lucky.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, why is it called Fanfan then?
I couldn't really find an exact reason. Kat Ironwood suggested in hers that vetiver, one of its nicknames was something like vanver or vervan.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It is vervain.
Vervain, yeah. And yeah. That was sacred to druids, wasn't it?
I think it was one of the sacred plants, yes. But vervain is another name for vetiver. I believe. I would need to double check that, but I'm going with it for right now.
Okay.
Because I believe the whole thing ties together. And vervain in, I believe, the Creole dialect became like van van.
Okay.
And so because of that van van, it evolved into just simply van van oil.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So it's really all just sort of pronunciation.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's used, it was used in Chinese wash, which is a famous hoodoo floor wash. It's used in all sorts of different applications having to do with luck and prosperity. And of course you use it too, and with your little rabbit's foot.
Hmm.
That is Van Van Oil.
Very cool.
All right. Well, I guess we should wrap it up. It's probably been a bit of a long show, but hopefully you're all feeling very lucky on this Friday the 13th. We really enjoyed bringing the show to you. We were hoping to have an interview for tonight, but that didn't quite work out. We've got some really good folks lined up for the future.
We do.
But interviews may not really kick back in until September, it looks like, at this point. But if that changes, you'll be the first to know, I guess. I don't know. Lane, you'll probably be the first to know.
I guess so. So yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah. If you need to reach us, you can find us at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
And, of course, there's always email, which is compassandkey@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Oh, quick, massive plug and thanks to Sarah, the Witch of Forest Grove. Speaking of our website.
Yes.
She did this amazing job redesigning our website for us.
She did. It is awesome looking now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is just, like, it's so witchy and so cool.
It's like, very us.
Like, sometimes I just sit there and look at the page. It's just the banner at the top. Yeah. Like, oh, it's so awesome.
It's great.
So, big thanks to you, Sarah, for doing that.
Definitely. Thank you.
And if you want to, you can find her at witchofforestgrove.com, I believe. If I've got that incorrect, there will be links in the show notes, and there are links all over the page as well.
Yeah.
So, if you need to reach us, we'd love to hear from you. But until next time.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening. Thank you.